Digital Stratosphere, the podcast that helps organizations throughout the world with their digital transformation journeys. Here, you will find independent and technology agnostic advice with no software vendor sales spin to help you make the best decisions for your organization. Whether you are in the process of selecting technology, in the midst of your transformation, or trying to get your initiative back on track, Digital Stratosphere provides expertise and best practices to help.
Hello and welcome to our latest episode of the Digital Stratosphere podcast. My name is Eric Kimberling. I'm the CEO of Third Stage Consulting. And today we want to talk about enterprise asset management, which is one of the common technologies used by many industries as part of their digital transformations. And with me today, I have Wayne Holtham, who's the Vice President of Third Stage Asia Pacific, based out of Australia. Wayne, thanks for being here today.
Thanks, Eric. It's great to be here. It's good to be part of the Third Stage family. A bit of my background is that I've been in this space of asset management over a number of years. Came from a trade background and then went into consulting. And so a big portion of my career has been in that delivering enterprise asset management projects. And so it's interesting that we're actually here today to talk about the differences of EAM.
Yeah, absolutely. And first of all, it's great having you on the team. Our Australia office is one of the more recent offices that we've opened internationally. And you and I have worked together for some time, even before you becoming part of Third Stage. So it's good to have you on board. Now, talking about enterprise asset management, that's something that some people may have heard of, some people listening may have heard of, some may not have. But what is, if you were to simplify for the layperson or someone who's not familiar with the term, what exactly is enterprise asset management?
It's about managing your assets so that you can actually plan and schedule and maintain them effectively. But you need to leverage a lot of your other ERP type functions, so your HCM, your finance, and so it leverages all of that, but it takes the next layer of complexity because you need to plan and schedule, and you need to have intelligence about your assets and understand what your assets are and what they should perform like. So it's a bit more detail that overlays it, other than just an ERP.
Yeah. So asset intensive companies are investing heavily in capital assets. I imagine that's a pretty important technology. What are some of those industries though that would benefit the most, or that most commonly would be drawn to enterprise asset management technology?
Mining, oil, and gas have always been the traditional players of enterprise asset management. These days, a bit more has come into the companies that end up as an infrastructure as a service. So a utility, electricity utility, a water utility, you know, airports, shipping ports, terminals, those sort of things are all now highly asset intensive, and they need to be managed and understood on their life cycle of their assets so that they can actually maintain for a particular cost base. And so there's even governments now, health, managing hospitals, managing justice, you know, all of the building and infrastructure they might have, universities. It's amazing how many asset intensive industries or organizations we have these days, over and above what we did in the past.
Yeah. And it seems like there's a lot of cost savings that could happen as a result of being able to manage that stuff well. And I have a question for you along those lines here in a second. Yeah. So what did you, just a question along the lines of your response of what industries are using enterprise asset management. What did these sorts of industries, what did they do before enterprise asset management technology existed? Or maybe give us a, you know, do you have an idea of what the history is, or what were people doing before to manage their assets and manage some of these things you're talking about?
Yeah, it was really in the past, people would rely on their trade network or their trade base of people to come in, and they would have manual records of when something was last replaced, and they would look at it and go, well, I think it's going to last a bit longer, or it's getting noisy, so I will replace it. And so it was based on a reactive type approach. And in today's world, that's a little bit hard because we want a lot of reliability. Whereas in the past, it would break and we'd fix it. We'd just accept that. And it wasn't the pressure or the cost drivers that drove high performance. Whereas today it's more of, we need maximum uptime. You know, we're actually, if we're an infrastructure service provider, we want to maintain a very high service level, but we don't want failures. And so it's now we need to understand what's the health of an asset. We need to be able to predict what it might be doing so that we don't have outages when we don't really don't want them.
Right. Yeah. I can see how that'd be of great value.
Yeah. When I first started in fleet management, I took over managing a fleet of line haul trucks here in Australia, and we had a card system that was our what we call today a CMMS, computer management maintenance system, and so it worked great. But you know, it was one of those things. It was limited in the sense that if you didn't fill out all the information, you didn't get you didn't have a good record. Well, not a lot's changed now when we move into the computer world, because if people don't update and maintain those records, we have even a bigger problem.
Right. Yeah. Sounds like it's come a long way. It's kind of like the old punch cards, you know, with the predecessor to ERP systems and mainframes and all that stuff. You had the old punch cards before my time, but I've heard all about them. And it seems like that similar trajectory or journey that technology evolution's been on in the EAM space as well.
Oh, definitely, yes. I suppose it's caused its own level of complexity, because the people that are using it are not necessarily IT savvy, and so they don't see the relevance of keeping records as detailed and information as clear and concise as what it should be. So that's usually a lot of the challenges that people face as they manage, work through, and try and improve what they do in the asset space.
That's interesting. So along those lines, and who in an organization typically would own the enterprise asset management function and the technology that would go along with that? Who's the owner typically in most companies?
Well, it's interesting because it's lots of organizations use an enterprise model. The enterprise owner is normally the CFO, and the CFO has probably the least amount of knowledge of how to run an asset. In some organizations, they'll have the operating officers, chief operating officer will actually be the champion of the asset space. But it's one of those areas that because it derives itself from finance usually drives the, I suppose, the way that we run our asset processes, because they're all trying to balance the cost. Whereas in today's world, we want to run them based on a life cycle and understanding of what it costs to actually operate the asset. And so that's more of an operational focus. And in businesses today, not a lot have actually taken that leap towards the operational focus.
Gotcha. Okay. Makes sense. Now, you started to talk a bit about this, but I'll ask it, maybe we can dive a little bit more into this, but what makes EAM, or enterprise asset management technology, different from ERP? What's the main difference between broader enterprise technologies versus EAM?
I suppose the difference is that when we talk about ERP, we're talking about transactional type information. When we're talking EAM, we're talking functional. So we're actually saying we need to understand the details about this asset, what its performance is like. Whereas when we're actually capturing financial information, we're just doing a transaction and measuring it. And so that's essentially the difference from EAM. The other dynamic that comes in it is the function piece is we actually have to manage timings of when we're going to work on that asset or when it's going to be out of service, which also then relies on its availability. So there's a lot more complexity about how we actually integrate. There's a lot more integration points where it comes to us needing to be good at our planning and scheduling. Whereas with finance, it's just, we're trying to measure our performance. In HR, we're trying to just identify who we actually have and how we would pay and that we're paying on time. So there's a lot more static type functions in an ERP, whereas in an EAM, there's a lot more moving parts that you're constantly updating and constantly are changing. And that's probably the difference.
Right. Now, it seems like there'd be a lot of potential to integrate the data that you have in your core financials or your core ERP enterprise technology and EAM. Is that true? Or how do you see the technology?
Oh, that's
talking
very, about. Very true. Because if you look at any piece of work that you do on an asset, you want to know how much it costs to be able to do that. And so your financial interaction is vital in the sense that every time you do, say, a work order or whatever, you'll actually have who's going to pay for that. So it might be that you're doing a capital improvement. It might be that you're actually doing an operational. It might be that you're doing, in some cases, it might be self-funded or cross-funded sort of thing. So that allows the interaction with the finance to be able to measure and identify where those costs are actually coming from and how they're actually being applied.
Makes total sense. Good. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'm going to ask you some more questions about some of the more forward thinking aspects of EAM, as far as what some of the trends are in the space, who the vendors are, how to develop a business case, and ultimately how to get started on an EAM journey. So we'll be back in just a second, right after this quick break.
If you are trying to achieve digital transformation success, turn to Third Stage Consulting Group. Third Stage's independent and technology agnostic consulting team helps clients define their digital strategies, select the right software, and manage their implementations. With offices in the US, Europe, and Australia, our team helps the world's most forward-thinking organizations through their transformation pitfalls and risks. Whether you are embarking on an ERP, HCM, CRM, supply chain management, or any other digital transformation, contact Third Stage Consulting to see how we can help you reach the third stage of transformation success. Learn more about us and download independent reports, videos, and other best practices at thirdstage-consulting.com.
All right, welcome back to the Digital Stratosphere Podcast. My name is Eric Kimberling. I'm here with Wayne Holtham, who's the Vice President of Third Stage in Asia Pacific. And we're talking today about enterprise asset management. And before the break, we were talking about what exactly EAM is and what how it differs from ERP and what some of the common industries that use EAM are. But what are some of the major business benefits that organizations achieve or can achieve from leveraging this sort of EAM technology?
Well, it's the benefits are really around their cost, and it's the only area where they can actually save money, I suppose, in what they provide as a service. So if you can effectively manage your asset life cycles, you can actually drive a lot more profit to your bottom line. And that's probably the big area. If you do it poorly, you can end up where the costs blow out, and that's a real challenge to manage, because it becomes an exponential cost blowout. If you know, one thing leads to another, which leads to another, and that those costs are quite can grow quite extensively. Whereas if you actually do it efficiently, you can actually improve what you're, because you know you're providing a service for a particular cost. If you can save because you're more efficient in the asset management space, then your profit area becomes far greater. And so it's a real upside to it, you know, and if you do it well, you can save between 60 and 80% on what it would traditionally cost, say five or six years ago in managing assets. So it's come a long way to be able to manage assets effectively, because there's a lot more opportunities to do that.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. And earlier in my career, I did a lot of work in energy and utilities, and I know asset management was a big deal to them, and still is a big deal to them, as you mentioned. But one thing I remember from doing a lot of work in that space was that a lot of utilities had this whole mindset of wanting to sweat the assets. So in other words, to get as much out of it as you can before you have to replace it, and really being able to recognize, you know, the assets that maybe you can milk them for longer, for lack of a better word, and then there's others you might have to do something sooner. But it kind of begs the question of, when you look at CapEx versus OpEx, you know, the capital spending versus your operating cost, do you see a difference in the benefits that companies can achieve either in their day-to-day maintenance and operating cost versus the bigger capital spend and outlays?
Yeah, and it's interesting you say about sweating the assets. You know, in the past, we would assume a life of an asset, whereas today we have the technology that allows us to look at this all of the health properties that an asset might be sending back to us, you know, information about how it's performing, like our own health check as such. And so that allows us to be able to sweat the asset but not risk the failure. And I suppose that's that difference. So we can actually maximize how long we run that asset and then plan for that capital investment to actually do that renewal in a time which suits the business or suits the service that we're doing. So the cost, the impact of it being out of service isn't as great. And so that's probably that bit of a difference when it comes to what we would have experienced in the past to what today is available to us.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes total sense. What about the vendors, the software vendors that provide this sort of technology? Who are just a few examples of some of the leading EAM technology vendors?
Well, all of the big players are in there. SAP, you know, S4 is in there as an EAM space, which is probably a big player in the market. You've got your Oracle, and JDE, the couple of brands that they actually run in there. You've got IBM, they run Maximo. You've got Microsoft with AX Dynamics. There's a couple of probably niche players in there. There's the Hitachi, ABB, they run Ellipse, which has probably been under a lot of different company banners over the years, but Ellipse is still a very prominent product in the energy space. Maintenance Connection is a total SaaS option. Infor runs a cloud suite. So in their manufacturing, they run a lot of asset management in the manufacturing space. They have a good suite there. One Upkeep, e-maintenance, and another smaller one, which is MVP Plant. And so they're probably, that's probably the top 10 players in that game. Such.
Okay. So even though you mentioned before that EAM and ERP are distinctly different, it sounds like you still have options in terms of either going out and finding a EAM specialized type of technology, or if you're implementing an ERP system, some of the vendors like SAP and Oracle and Infor and Microsoft, like you mentioned, they tend to have an EAM module or offering that can kind of bolt onto their ERP. Is that true?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And now we've got the opportunity where best of breed is starting to, I suppose, technology's evolved to the point where ERPs are a lot more have a greater ability to be able to integrate with other type systems, you know, whether it be HCM systems or whether it be CRM systems, or some of the EAM systems are similar in that sense. So you could have an ERP and then put a best of breed EAM solution on the front end to be able to manage your assets. And probably companies like Oracle and SAP don't prefer that, but definitely that's an option in today's world.
Gotcha. Okay. Great. That makes total sense. All right. So how has EAM technology changed in recent times? Earlier you were talking about the early days of EAM, but just in more recent years, how has the technology evolved? How has it improved? What are some of the major advancements that some of these vendors are making?
A lot of it is in the information availability. So, you know, if you look at a lot of these systems here, instead of having to search and find information about an asset or how it's performing or whatever, they've now developed it to the point where that information is there and available to the user, to the either the asset manager or whatever. And so they can actually see we've got this starting to show signs of failure. And so we need to start planning early to be able to do this. Whereas in the past, it was that thing of someone might pick it up, they might not pick it up, and then you would start to plan. And so today, the inside information that technology offers is far superior than what we've had in the past.
Okay. So the technology has changed quite a bit. There's a lot of options out there in the marketplace, and it seems like it could be a bit overwhelming if you're an organization. You're not really sure where to start or, you know, how to get started on the journey. What sort of advice would you give to organizations in terms of just identifying the best EAM options for them that might best fit their needs?
I think they really need to understand what they're looking for out of their system. So, EAM presents a challenge in the sense that it's data hungry. So if you've got systems that are fairly old, you haven't really taken a lot of energy to actually maintain the information about your assets. Your systems and processes aren't really solid and robust, then you need to really understand it, because any of the new systems you put in will cause a lot of issues, because you will not get the benefit out of them because of the amount of data that they require to be able to give the information that, that they're really known for. And so when the evaluation comes, it's not just buying something that is, this looks great from a user interface. It's understanding what sits behind that. And that's, I suppose, that's that evaluation piece of how mature are we with our systems and processes. And, you know, most times with EAM, a lot of the users are very comfortable with looking at adopting new processes. But if it becomes overwhelming, they will just pull away, and you end up with a gap between the functionality and, you know, what you're actually trying to achieve.
Right, right. So having someone like the third stage team that's independent and agnostic can really help navigate some of the differences and the nuances of the different technologies relative to your needs. It sounds like that could be a value to organizations that are trying to pick a solution.
Yeah, it is. And it's confusing at the moment, in the sense that, you know, a vendor will come in and say, you know, I have the best system, and they'll demonstrate it and make it look like it really works well. Then right. You'll have a system integrator. You might ask a trusted system integrator, and that system integrator doesn't really share with you that they actually have relationships with, say, an Oracle, with an SAP, with a whatever. And so it just depends which partner comes in and actually shares their vision of what you should be selecting. And so, and if you walked into or talked to a different partner within that same organization, he might give you a completely different story. So it's about breaking down that bias that many have when they actually are associated to a particular vendor or many vendors. And so, so that independence really does help, because the questions that an independent might ask are answers that a vendor usually shudders in answering, because they're the ones that really unpack what they're looking for.
Right. Now, what about when it comes time to go implement a new technology? Let's say you find the right solution for you, and you're ready to go implement and make that change to your business. What are some of the challenges and pitfalls you've seen organizations struggle with when they're trying to deploy these sorts of technologies?
Well, EAM is a bit more of a challenge than ERP, in the sense that it touches every area of the business. So, you know, it will change what you're doing in finance. It will change what you're doing in HR. It will change what you're doing in supply chain. And so it's about managing all of those complexities that it adds, in the sense that you've got, you know, all of these areas being touched, processes are being changed, information requirements are even greater. And so what you need to be able to do is understand your phase of what you're actually delivering. So you need to know, as you go from phase to phase, you've actually completed all of what you intended to do in the first phase, say discovery phase, and then as you roll through that life cycle of the project, that you've actually completed and you understand where you're at each time. Because every bit you miss in each of the earlier stages becomes a real challenge when you try and go live and deploy. So,
yeah, that's interesting. And it's really interesting to hear you talk about how, and I had forgotten this in my past experience with EAM, that there really is a really broad impact to an organization. Even if you're just implementing EAM, it doesn't mean that you're not going to impact other parts of the organization that maybe aren't directly using the solution. So it sounds like, in terms of other upstream and downstream processes, it sounds like those people and those processes will be impacted, even if they're not direct users of the technology. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly right. And it's one of those things, because, and also putting EAM in, it's about looking at the driver. So if I'm managing an asset, I want to look at the life cycle cost of an asset, whereas that won't actually align my financials with my financials as such. And so there's always that bit of a difference between what finance are looking as an objective and what the assets managers are looking at as an objective. And so there's a bit of tension always when it comes to who should drive what the cost of chart of accounts looks like, and the cost allocation methodologies, and those sort of things that are probably the integration point for EAM and ERP.
Yeah, no, that's sound advice. I appreciate your feedback on this. And we're about out of time, but I want to thank you, Wayne, for being here today. This was a great discussion and pretty eye-opening and interesting to hear about a technology that's not always top of mind when companies think about their digital transformations, but it can have a huge impact, it sounds like, on a lot of different organizations. So thank you for being here today.
No, my pleasure. And it's good to be able to talk about the subject that's dear to my heart. So,
yeah, that always makes it fun.
Yes, well, that's right.
Well, thank you, Wayne. I've included both yours and my contact information in the description field for this podcast or in the information field. So be sure to reach out if you've got questions about EAM, feel free to reach out to Wayne. Or if you're in Asia Pacific and you're part of a digital transformation in general, feel free to reach out to Wayne. Or if not, you can reach out to me as well if it's outside of Asia Pacific. So thank you again, Wayne. And thank you all for listening. And we'll hope to see you on the next episode of Digital Stratosphere Podcast. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Learn more about us and download independent reports, videos, and other best practices at thirdstage-consulting.com.